We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Let's go to the Western Hotline where my man Evan Silva joins me. He is the co-founder of Establish the Run, which is a great platform. If you haven't had an opportunity yet, you can follow him on Twitter at Establish the Run. Evan, first and foremost, man, it's been a few months. Hopefully all is well, business is well. I hope you you and the family are doing good, man. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too. Yeah, just hoping for sports, just like everybody else, you know. And I don't know, I definitely have days where I become more pessimistic. There are some days where I'm more optimistic, although the optimistic days have been a little bit further and far between recently.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It seems like, you know, every time it's that one step forward, two steps back type of mentality. With just with everything going on, and, you know, we spent the first hour here, Evan, talking about, you know, I hate using like the term unfair because life is unfair, right? I mean, and this virus doesn't care about, you know, people and watching sports live. It's just the way that it goes. But, you know, here in Erie County, in Buffalo, in New York State, right? Like, we were the epicenter of this thing, and we mistakes were made, but they were made early. And I think that New York State and Buffalo in particular really figured it out. I mean, in New York, 1% of the positive test of the 70,000 that were yesterday that were surpassed, 1% of them came from New York State. And, you know, if there's one city that has done what it's going to take to get fans in the stands, I want to put Buffalo as that city. And the problem is there just is no universal there isn't a compass to this. There's not any standard to be set. So therefore, even though a place like Buffalo might be ready, it's very clear Houston and Miami and Atlanta, these other states, these other cities with teams in it are not. And it's unfortunate because I think we're all a little frustrated when you see that Houston's, you know, ICUs are being completely overflown, because at this point that shouldn't be the issue. And that, and again, I hate saying, well, now it's going to affect us watching football, and now I'm extra mad about it. But in the grand scheme of things, we talked about this, Evan. It's like football is the great uniter, right? And this is the toughest thing about this is, you know, sitting next to a guy that you might have sit next to as a season ticket holder for the last 10 years. You know, you're going to miss out on opportunities to watch football this year, and it sucks, but at the end of the day, like, that's what we're in right now, and it's kind of a hole we dug ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, you know, for the past 4 months, I actually hid out in my parents' house in, like, the deep suburbs of St. Louis. I live in Chicago. I just wanted to get my daughter and I away from like the real high concentration areas. And it was interesting living out there. Very few people wear masks out there. And, you know, I come back to Chicago now and everyone is wearing a mask. And Illinois has actually done a pretty good job, relatively speaking, of keeping it contained. So I, you know, all I have to contribute there is just please wear a mask, because, That really has been a difference maker in certain spots across the USA.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, man. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of started getting to in my conversation last segment was, you know, I start to wonder, not that fantasy football already isn't like one of the most popular things in the world, but, you know, I wonder if fans are not able to go and watch games live. Do you expect to see maybe memberships? Do you expect to see, you know, teams? Do you expect to see maybe someone who has for a long time only played one fantasy football team, now he might want to use three or four teams? Do you expect the, I don't know, growth of fantasy football to maybe even take a spike this year, considering it's pretty populated as it is. But with the way that this season is looking like it'll go, I wonder if we see a big spike in popularity.
Well, I certainly think strongly, and I would even say no, that the thirst for sports is really, really strong, that the thirst for sports betting and fantasy football is really, really strong. We don't even know if there's going to be a season right now, and there are still people in FFPC, in FFPC high-stakes draft, drafting teams that cost $1,850 so that they can, you know, just because they want to draft a team, you know, in terms of fantasy football. And we don't even know if there's going to be a season. There are people betting on these golf tournaments that no one would normally even care the slightest about. I mean, Mickelson isn't playing, Tiger Woods isn't playing, and you know, people are playing on DraftKings, and, you know, they're really soaking it up. I mean, these unknown golfers are all of a sudden becoming like favorites, you know, among like the betting community, and, you know, like golfers that no one would even ever have like heard of normally, you know. So the thirst is really, really strong. I would say that if we do get a football season, and it is, even if it's reduced, even if the games are reduced, I mean, certainly I don't even know if we're going to have any – what kind of a training camp are
right.
we going to have? I have no idea. Are we going to have a single preseason game? I would lean toward predicting zero preseason games right now and a, you know, a slightly shortened season. So, but I think that even in that event, people want to have some skin in the game, you know, and the legalization of sports betting – has begun to circulate around the USA. So, absolutely. I expect a spike in interest in fantasy football, sports betting, all that kind of stuff.
Evan Silva here on the Wester Hotline. You can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan Silva. He is one of the co-founders of Establish the Run, and you can go check out his website, establishtherun.com. Evan, you and I joke around, but I asked you to come on the show, and you're like, absolutely, but only if we get to talk about 2020 MVP Josh Allen, which is my favorite part of you. So let's talk a little bit about this season, because, you know, obviously the stakes are high, and whether or not the season happens now almost kind of takes a back seat to, is there maybe more pressure on any other young quarterback? And maybe you could say Sam Darnold, and I'd probably agree with you, but it almost seems like he has a built-in out clause in his career with Adam Gase and that Jets team in general, whereas there is literally no out clause for Josh Allen. This is maybe, I can't remember a third-year quarterback have more pressure on him to succeed, and I want to think Mitchell Trubisky, but there wasn't this outside pressure that I think that really exists with Josh Allen. Can you think of another example of a guy who has this much pressure, but it just doesn't seem like it with Josh? He just doesn't really wear that pressure on his sleeve at all.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that he doesn't seem like a guy that really succumbs to pressure. And you know, he kind of is like a sort of carefree dude. He's really smart. Remember, he had like an incredible Wonderlic score. I think he had like 37 or something like that on the Wonderlic. Really smart guy, and just kind of, you know, young and living his life. And, you know, he's definitely does not carry that pressure on his sleeve. So, and they just, the infrastructure around him right now is really impressive. I had skepticism at first about the Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott regime, but I mean, I've done a 180 on that. I love the way they've built the team analytically. You know, they understand that Josh Allen's deep ball has a lot of room for improvement. So what do? They make an entirely analytical move, and they go get the best deep ball receiver in the league in Stephon Diggs. I like the state of the offensive line. I like the depth of the offensive line. I like the fact that they have, especially in a year where it looks like people aren't, you know, teams aren't even going to be practicing, essentially, that they are returning, that they have a ton of continuity at head coach, at offensive coordinator, at defensive coordinator, and pretty much throughout the entire offense around Josh Allen, with the exception of Stephon Diggs. But what are they, I mean, they're pulling Isaiah McKenzie and Duke Williams and, and Robert Foster out of the offense and inserting Stephon Diggs, you know, in maybe the single biggest personnel upgrade of the entire offseason. If you're talking about what they were working with at that receiver position last year and now what they have this year. So I really, really like the way that the Bills are building. And I think they're going to win a bunch of games, assuming that there are a bunch of games this year.
So before we maybe dive a little deeper on Josh Allen, the Stephon Diggs aspect of this really is super interesting to me, because I don't know where you stand on this, but I stand in the camp that Kirk Cousins, I'm not going to, you know, bring in his win-loss record in primetime games the moments where they look sometimes too big for Kirk Cousins. I know you shouldn't just forget about that stuff, but I want to, for the context of this conversation, because Kirk Cousins is kind of the perfect example of a guy that maybe you don't fully appreciate until you're no longer catching footballs from him. Right, I view him as one of, Evan, the most underrated deep ball accuracy quarterbacks in football. Yeah. There are guys that he is one of those guys that just makes throws, and he gets 19 attempts a game. And I always thought that the quote unquote drama between him and Diggs was far more scheme driven than it was personality driven. And I kind of want your thought process on Kirk Cousins and what Kirk Cousins' presence for Stephon Diggs did for his potential, not only fantasy value, but, you know, the value of him and whether or not he can duplicate what he did in Minnesota in Buffalo.
I think his stats are going to go down. I mean, I think he's not going to catch as many balls. I think that the accuracy of Josh Allen's deep ball, I mean, he could improve, but if what we've seen to this point maintains, I mean, I think that Stephon Diggs is going to go get balls that, I mean, he's just going to go get some Aaron balls. You know, and really, if you look at last year, I mean, if Stephon Diggs goes and gets like four or five of those, you know, deep downfield shots that just were errant, or the receiver just couldn't go get it, but Stephon Diggs can go get those, like almost like a dog chasing a frisbee down, you know, because that's what Stephon Diggs can do. That's what John Brown can do. Now you have two of those guys. But I completely agree with your analysis of Kirk Cousins. I mean, the primetime thing is ridiculous. He played for the freaking Redskins. You know, like, he played for the Redskins. So, I think that Kirk Cousins is absolutely one of the most underrated passers and quarterbacks in the game. He's, you know, I think he's well above replacement level. He's you know, he makes a positive addition to your offense. But I just, you know, again, like the dog chasing down the frisbee, I think that Stephon Diggs is going to, just putting him around Josh Allen is going to make Josh Allen's efficiency rise, and he's just going to go get some of those errant balls.
Evan Silva here on the Western Hotline, and I always think about this, right? And percentages in anything is the difference between one or two things going differently, and that's what I do truly believe about, you know, this offense last year. Josh Allen was part of the reason that it wasn't a better or more efficient passing offense. There's no doubt about it. He led the league in uncatchable passes percentage. He also was last in the league in checkdowns. And I don't want to say that those two things are necessarily stats you can put hand in hand, but I do wonder, you know, what a Zach Moss and Devin Singletary backfield. Let's just put, Evan, the New York Jets posted a tweet about, well, now the Jets have this dynamic 1-2 punch with Frank Gore and Le'Veon Bell. And listen, I'm a big Frank Gore fan. I think he did wonders for Devin Singletary, but he single-handedly roadblocked a lot of what this offense's efficiency when he was on the field. Zach Moss's insertion into this offense in place of Frank Gore, like, what do you think that potentially does for efficiency purposes for this offense, considering, I mean, they just were, the numbers bear out, they were one of the most inefficient offenses all of football when Frank Gore was on the field.
Yeah, Frank Gore, for many years now, really, you know, since sort of the end of his prime, has been a guy that winds up playing more than, you know, anyone anticipates, maybe even the teams that are signing him themselves, because the coaches just absolutely love him. Because he gets out there and he's, you know, the hardest working player on the team. All the players look up to him. The coaches even look up to him. I mean, I think he's the best coach on the Jets coaching staff right now. I mean, I would go with Frank Gore at head coach over Adam Gase if that was an option. You know, he pass blocks. He's always in the right spot. He's just not explosive. And you're right. So that put a drain on their efficiency last year, and now they're trying to become more efficient by, you know, drafting Zach Moss in the third round. They're going to play Devin Singletary more, as they showed that they were very willing to do down the stretch last year, including the playoffs. He averaged 20 touches a game over their last six. So yeah, I think that the efficiency of their rushing offense will also improve. And again, you know, this is a situation where, you know, they're just going to have fresher legs on the field this year.
You know, too, Evan, I don't know why this is the case, but the Bills, I love Brian Daboll. I think Daboll has done an unbelievably, just a remarkable job working, and has over the course of his career when he's been tasked with play calling, doing more with less. And I mean, this is a guy that had moderate success with Matt Moore, mind you, right? And Brady Quinn. And Brady Quinn later in his career, not like Brady Quinn early on. So, you know, I think about this too. That's what makes it so hard for me to really comprehend why this team cannot scheme up. They just cannot scheme up running back screens. And I don't know whether it's because of Josh Allen. I don't know if, you know, because of what how defenses want to defend Josh Allen, that screens just maybe aren't readily available to them. But it does blow my mind. I mean, you look at, if you watch a game of Tom Brady's, I mean, 80% of his passes are at or within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. He's not stretching the ball down the field. So I'm not saying I think the Bills need to convert Josh Allen into a guy that checks down the ball a bunch, but you know, an easy way to jack up your completion percentage by 4 points, you know, have more completions around the line of scrimmage. And they have a guy now in Diggs. They have a guy now like a John Brown who's not going to get double covered. These are guys now that they can insert in different ways. And I also think this too, is there a more unique tight end in terms of skill set than Dawson Knox? I mean, this is a guy that got an end around last year. like I think they have such a unique skill set on offense that doesn't it make sense that they should figure out ways to try to get Josh Allen going in that shorter area of the field?
Yeah, so, you know, I think that when they drafted Josh Allen, and, you know, everyone knows that all these guys came from Carolina, right? So I think that there's no doubt that when they were evaluating Josh Allen, they drew a lot of similarities to Cam Newton. And Cam Newton got off to a hotter start as a passer in his career than has Josh Allen so far. But one sort of development in Cam Newton's career was, you know, he began his career as a fairly low percentage passer. And then in 2018, the Panthers, and this was actually after Bean and McDermott had left, but still, I mean, they can look at this blueprint and, you know, they really focused on getting the ball out of Cam's hands quickly and to Christian McCaffrey. And Cam Newton completed like 67% of his passes that year. You know, so, and you're right that they can throw bubble screens to Stephon Diggs and John Brown and even Dawson Knox and Devin Singletary and increase the efficiency and the percentage, you know, the increasing the his completion percentage, but and also like getting him into more of a rhythm earlier in games, just getting him completions earlier in games. I think that they definitely have that at their disposal at this point.
All right. So last thing I'm going to ask you, Evan, is I'm overly interested in year three of Josh Allen, right? But I think I'm maybe more overly interested in year three of Lamar Jackson. The efficiency passing numbers, listen, they're unsustainable. So good, they're unsustainable, right? And I don't want to make it sound like I'm taking a shot at Lamar Jackson, that I don't think he's he's been. But it's like saying, you know, if you're going to drive a car 200 miles per hour, eventually you're going to run out of gas. It's not a sustainable way to drive a car. The same can be said about the style of which Lamar Jackson is winning and beating defenses. What are your expectations for year three? And is regression almost, like, is it almost a guarantee at this point?
It is from a touchdown rate standpoint. I mean, the Ravens had the fewest pass attempts in the NFL last year, and Lamar Jackson led the NFL in touchdown passes. That just doesn't happen. You know, so it's going to be end up being an outlier season. I think his 36 touchdown passes are probably going to come down into like the 24, 25, 26 range. He's hit a 9% touchdown rate. That's just touchdowns over divided by pass attempts. Only three quarterbacks in NFL history have ever finished with 9% or more. So his percentage is going to come down. With that said, I think he's going to have another really good season. We know how dynamic he is with his legs. We know that Marquise Brown had a really big week one and had a really big game in their playoff loss to Tennessee. But other than that, I mean, he was coming off Lisfranc surgery on his foot, and he was pretty inconsistent. He was on the injury report like over half the year. Mark Andrews also,
yeah,
who scored 10 touchdowns.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he had an unbelievable year. He also, I mean, he only played 41% of the Ravens' offensive snaps last year because he also was dealing with a foot injury. So, you know, I think they're going to be healthier. They're going to be more experienced in the passing game, and they're going to remain efficient. Probably not as efficient as they were last year, but I still think that they're going to have one of the best offenses in the league. They're another team that has a ton of continuity. I mean, Greg Roman and Wink Martindale, their offensive and defensive coordinator, easily could have been NFL head coaches this past offseason, and neither of them left. They're in a great spot.
You know, I look at Greg Roman and look at Brian Daboll, and it's not to say that nobody acknowledges them, because that's not true. I mean, they do. But is there two offensive coordinators that are maybe underappreciated or not talked about enough as those elite-style play callers? Because, you know, it definitely doesn't fall on me that without Brian Daboll, I'm not sure that Josh Allen is able to take incremental step in year two. And more importantly, I'm not sure that Josh Allen even remotely resembles the player he is right now without a Brian Daboll. And you know what? I'm going to say the same about Lamar Jackson, because I do think that you couldn't have found a better lock and key fit with Lamar Jackson than Greg Roman. I don't think, you know, if you're asking Lamar Jackson to run Kyle Shanahan's offense, is there that same level of success there? Like, I don't know or how about this? Like, if he's forced to run a Kevin Stefanski offense, is that something that is going to fit and really exploit all of the great things Lamar Jackson does? Like, these two are just so undervalued and under-talked about, I think.
I completely agree with that, and I almost don't even have anything to add to that. I just agree with everything you just said. So,
you know what? I should have you on more, Evan, so you can tell me how right I always am. I like that.
I liked it when we used to argue, though.
I know. It was way more fun. It was way more fun. All right, buddy. Well, thanks again. Hey, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk. As always, you're so generous with your time, and I do really appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work. Love the stuff over at Establish the Run, and stay safe. And, hey, I'm hoping for some football here shortly, so we'll be keeping an eye on the account, man.
All right, Nate. Take it easy, man.
Appreciate it. Evan Silva there on the Western Hotline from Establish the Run. You can check him out at Evan Silva on Twitter, and at Establish the Run is his publication. Great stuff, as always, from Evan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.